That's your, what comes out of your mouth reveals what you're worshiping. And so that's in all your ways, acknowledge Him and it'll come out of your mouth. And you go, oh man, that sure got me in trouble. But they weren't talking to me before, they won't be talking to me now. And so it's all of the world. If you want world peace, worldly peace, and socialist harmony, you can only build on lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, pride of life. All this of the world. You cannot build on the Father. Well, what is Marxism? I studied Marxism. A little bit more about what I went through in all this. I ended up in Tulsa, 25 years, construction company, running my own business. And then in my later 30s, I had a chance to go to a major Christian university there. My wife worked there in word processing. I could go free. Now, I would never gone if I, it's expensive school. There's no way I would have gone, but it was free and it was cool, man, you know. And I could block off, you know, a few hours and take classes, and I focused on European history and philosophy. Had one professor earn his doctor's degree on the French Revolution. We were practicing the French Revolution. And so we went through names and events and details. You know, ignorance is bliss. I'm not blissful because I watch the news and I see it all unfold here. What we did not have here to begin in this nation, the way the French Revolution functioned, we had a different revolution. See, we kept the father around. They got rid of the father's authority, even in the home. You know, you've heard the phrase tolerance of ambiguity. Well, that's a big phrase today. Let's be tolerance of ambiguity. You know, diversity and unity, actually deviancy and unity. Those kinds of phrases. Well, tolerance of ambiguity, which is being in education and marketing and workplace, is a phrase for homosexuality in France. See, because that's ambiguity, isn't it? We're not too sure. Is it a man? Is it a woman? Is it a thing? See, as long as everybody's happy, it's okay. See, that's the depravity that we have embraced now. We have rejected the American Revolution, which was not built on depravity and deviancy. There was still some semblance of civility. Some right and wrong in the conscience of the citizens. I took another class under, or several classes under Dr. Poteet, who had earned his doctorate degree on how Hitler had taken the minds of the youth in Germany and restructured them for his own purpose. So I took every class he offered. I took John Whitehead's class. He has defended a case on the Supreme Court on the Constitution. We read 1,600 pages of Supreme Court decisions. He said, go to the source. And we read in the 50s where the court started saying, well, we don't know what those framers meant. Well, there's trouble abrew. See, if you swore to defend and uphold the Constitution and you say you don't know what those framers meant, there's tyranny coming down the road, because you can read the framing of the Constitution. The minutes were kept and you would know exactly what those guys meant. But they didn't want that father's authority to be in any part of our society. Eisenhower was asked if he ever made any mistakes while he was president. He said two. He said they both are sitting on the Supreme Court because he brought in dialectic judges. Up until that time, there were judges who honored the Constitution. After that, it was all about no longer sovereignty, no longer the father's authority. It was globalism. It was just focusing on the children of revolution, rebellion. And we've seen the courts change. See, they got rid of the Ten Commandments. They got rid of prayer. They got rid of the scriptures. And they got rid of spanking. You know how to stop the crime that's in the schools? You know, the big crime used to be gum under the table. You know how they got rid of that? You know, you come with gum, you give it to everybody. Well, if you come with gum, you give it to everybody. Now, all of a sudden, we have equality. We're based on feelings, make everybody feel good. And you destroy the conscience because the conscience said it's wrong. You're given rules and commands. It's wrong. This is right and that's not. And so you have to get rid of the paddle. So we went to dialogue, relationship, rather than paddle, right and wrong. We got rid of the paddle and all of a sudden now we had deviancy in the classroom. And the teachers had to be trained on how to accept it, tolerate it. That was my training. And so the end result now is we have crime. We have all kinds of immorality. I'm going to get in Bloom's taxonomies. I warn Christian schools. I've had superintendent presidents of principals of Christian schools come to meetings. I actually met with one superintendent, spent 45 minutes in her office explaining this material. But they went ahead and used it. All teachers are structured on this material. And they ended up with a school where the kids at lunch were going out to the car having sex at lunch in a Christian school. The girls would get in hot tubs, dress inappropriately, or, you know, not, your dress wouldn't show up, and got on the internet. And what's the school decide? Well, we don't want to ruin the children for life, so we'll send them home for a week. When it should have been kicked out, cast out. And they have all kinds of immorality. In fact, some of the parents were taking their children out of the Christian school, sending them to secular school because there was more sanity and civility and decency in the secular school than in the Christian school, because they turned to this, how do you feel, what do you think environment in the Christian environment. Then what happened? Well, the last classes I took was from a professor who earned his doctor's degree out of Harvard. I did several do that, but he earned his in communist Yugoslavia. So he studied the Soviet system, a Tito's form, unique amongst all the other satellite countries. I went back to construction full-time, and then Goals 2000 came on the scene. I got involved with that, and then the Lord sent me back to the university, and that's where I then read the books I was trained in. All teachers are grounded on Bloom's taxonomies. The first book came out in 1956, a long time ago. Still today, last year I spoke at Liberty University. All professors are required to use Bloom's taxonomies as their curriculum. Taxonomy first is... And I'll get to Marx, because I learned more about Marxism studying contemporary American education than all the classes I took. I've explained it this way. If we had a room full of people here, and I mentioned Bloom's taxonomy, the moment I mention this, to most people it's just another book, some more data, you know. But if I took a picture of my audience, and then I showed it up on the screen, we could circle the teachers. Because the moment you mention Bloom's taxonomies, they all smile. Universal. Because this is it. When you sit in college, your whole structure of curriculum determines the environment of the classroom. How you're going to learn, what you're going to learn. This is your bread and butter. And nobody knows it. This is private stuff. This is professional stuff. Parents don't know this. I guarantee you go to any teacher in your community, there is a word again, in your neighborhood, and you ask them about Bloom's taxonomy, they'll grin. Oh, wow, you know about Bloom. So I went to the university and went to the source, and I began reading this material. Now, you don't get this material in college. Now, Oral Roberts University requires for teacher training Bloom's taxonomy. Southern Nazarene University, Pensacola Christian University, all the Christian universities that are accredited. If you're accredited school, Christian included, you have to use Bloom's taxonomy as your foundation for thought. So as you in college get this, you don't get the book, you get the application. It's in all your material. So in fact, they say in the book, don't read it. Because, you know, the first paragraph you have to read 20 times to understand the first sentence. You don't have time to do that in college. Well, today I think the kids could actually start, because we've been in it so long they could relate to what's going on. So by page 3, you're already thinking you had some lumber to move, some dishes to wash, you know, something better to do with your life. So you don't read page 6. Page 6 says this is a psychological classification system. That's illegal. It's illegal for me to do psychological analysis on your child with the intent of changing them, see, changing the way they think, without your permission. But parents aren't told that. We just say, well, they're an educator. Forgetting that Marx said, the educator himself must be educated. So it was the method that was being used in the classroom. See, I'm not against education. I'm not against teaching. It's the method that's being applied. So the taxonomy means there's more than one. So you wouldn't have a taxonomy if there were one. There has to be two or more. Say, if you make a cake, you're a taxonomist. Do you know that? Or a pie? You don't just grab anything white. You know, everything's white is the one, right? There's one thing, it's white. We'll just throw it in there. Now you make sure it's baking powder, baking soda, you know, or flour or sugar, whatever. You taxonomize, you classify, because you want to control the outcome. You want to have predictability. You know, everybody was bragging about your pie last time, and you're really working hard to make sure it's the same pie this time. And you got to have all the facts together. Right mixture of elements, right liquids, right temperature, right time of mixing them. I make cookies, you know, and some of the stuff I make, if you it's a cake I make, and you got to put in the baking soda first, and then you put in the baking powder, and there's just the right timing to everything if you want to get the perfect rise on it. And so it's, you're a chemist. You're a lab technician. Baking is. And it's awesome. It's wonderful. If I could escape, that's where I would go. But the Lord says, do this. it's a taxonomy of educational objectives. What kind of student did I want coming out of my classroom? In a traditional system, there's no taxonomy. It's just facts are. Learn the facts, go out and repeat them. But this is a psychological classification system. And then on page 32, he says, we recognize the point of view that truth and knowledge is only relative. There are no lasting truths for all times and all places. He paraphrases a famous philosopher who says, in the eyes of the dialectic philosophy, nothing is absolute, nothing is sacred. See, truth and knowledge is only relative. There are no lasting truths for all times and all places. He paraphrases Karl Marx. So I earned my teacher degree back in 1971 as every certified teacher in your community, in your neighborhood, learns Bloom's taxonomy, a Marxist training manual. 1 million of these books were published in 1971, the year I graduated, for communist Chinese education system. This is, you go anywhere in the world, this is the common language. See what God do at the Tower of Babel? Communication. This is universal communication. This is the key. People are going after Common Core. Ever heard of Common Core? It's a big thing. They're missing it. It's not Common Core. You can go after Common Core, outcome-based education. We will leave no child behind. You know what that means? We will not leave a children behind under parental authority. All children are at risk. Why? Because they're under parental authority. So you can go after name after name after name after name. It's the procedure itself. This is the Bible. This is the procedure. How to liberate the children from parental authority. How to come into the garden and liberate two children from the father's authority. Same system, same procedure. Nothing new under the sun. He says this will destabilize the students in the classroom. Then the second book came out in 1964, Taxonomy of Educational Objectives, but two effective feelings domain. This is the heart. Traditional home, dad says, take the garbage out. The child might not feel like taking the garbage out, so they say, hey, dad, I don't feel like taking the garbage out, and you learn real quick where your feelings lie. They were subordinate to the facts. Well, I don't feel like 2 + 2 = 4. It doesn't matter how you feel. It doesn't matter what you think. It is 4, and it cannot be any other number. Now you can actually get an A with 5 because they're grading the system. They're grading the language. How do you feel? What do you think? Well, I think it's 5. Oh, how'd you come to that? Well, I just felt, it must be okay. It's ambiguous. It's ambiguity. This is driving engineers crazy in the workplace. They're frustrated. In fact, every engineer I know that becomes very argumentative in the workplace because they'll say, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And, oh, don't hurt his feelings. You can get people killed with this stuff. And then when they retire, you know what's written on their resume? Not a team player. They'll never get a job again. In the Soviet Union, they call it psychological. All they'd have to do in the Soviet Union is say, you're psychological, you'll never be hired. Today, for real, these are people who put us on the moon. These are people who build cruise missiles. When they are not a team player, when they're going to the facts, and they're not dialectic, when they're didactic, right is right and wrong is wrong, black, white, sheep, goats, heaven, hell, above, below, that traditional way of thinking. When they retire, it's written, not a team player, unhirable. And it's a shame what's going on. See, I see it. I meet them. I go coast to coast. I've had 5,000 meetings, 18 years of sharing. And so I get to meet everybody. Some like hearing this and some hate it. But so Bloom then, the feelings domain. What does he say on page 55? What we call good teaching is the teacher's ability to attain effective objectives. In other words, how can I get your children's feelings out in the classroom? And then he says, through challenging the students' fixed beliefs. Well, who gave those children those fixed beliefs, and who gave educators the right to create an environment where they could feel safe in challenging those fixed beliefs? The safe zone. And so that was my agenda. We can talk about anything in this classroom, open-ended. That's Rogerian psychology. I'm not going to tell you what's right and wrong. That's non-directive, Rogerian psychology. And those are the same two things that Satan did with Adam and Eve in the garden. I'm not going to tell you what's right or wrong. God does that. The Father does that. Dad does that. But not me. And we can talk about anything. How do you feel about this? What do you think about that? Well, Dad doesn't ask me how I felt. He didn't ask me how I felt about taking the garbage out when he told me to take it out. Well, what do you think? Well, it looks like you got a lot of interest in this. Why don't you do it? You know, I'm not interested. I don't have any self-interest in this. And so that was my training, how to challenge a student's fixed beliefs, how to come between the children and their parents and liberate them from parental authority. See, the issue is, if I have 20 children in here, they come from 20 different homes with fathers with different positions. And we can't have community with that. So I have to liberate the children from all the father's authority, that system, and now we can have unity. We can have the group grade. See? Well, the heart. Bloom knows it. Page 91, he says, the affective domain is, in retrospect, a virtual Pandora's box. Greek mythological story, you receive a gift from a friend, you're told you can't open it. How long would you last? A day, a week, a month, a year, 10 years? Say, tonight you know you're not going to get through, so you get the family together. We're going to open this thing once for all, find out what's in it. You know, you're told not to open it. Well, the thing is, when you open the box, you can't close it. And what comes out of the box? It is a known fact. What comes out of this story? Or the story tells us what comes out of the box. What comes out of the box? Evil. Evil. And Bloom says, this, we're using a system that when we open up that child's box, you know what the lid to the box is? Dad's authority. When we liberate the child from parental authority, that wicked, evil, depraved, deceived heart is set free. And now we have a French Revolution, because what'd they say? Humpty Dumpty fell off a wall. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall, you know, fell off the wall. All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty Dumpty back together again. You try to restore your child after your child's been in my class. Because my whole agenda was, first of all, to reveal to the child the parent is irrational. When your dad told you to do something you didn't want to do, because what you want to do is good, right? And he, because it's pleasurable, and he's just interfering, he's saying, suspend pleasure and obey me, that's irrational. Didn't you think he was irrational? Dad, you don't, you ever say it? Dad, you don't understand. See, if he doesn't understand, he's not rational. He's not in the moment. And so now I'm revealing to the students, the fathers are irrational. Because look at all the division we have here. How can it, look at all these different gods, if you look at it that way. We got 20 different gods in this classroom. And they're all conflicting with one another. Because that's God's structure, see. Father's voice, children obey. And so the children then learn that dad's irrational. And so when they go home, they treat him as irrelevant. They'll walk right by you. And then he says, this won't only change a child, it'll change a whole nation. Some of the writing in here is so offensive. He writes, a significant thing to remember this very ambitious project, and it is the project. There's no plan B, this is plan A. Is the major impact of the new program is to develop attitudes and values towards learning which are not shared by the parents. Then he says there are many stories of the conflict tension that these new practices are producing between parents and children. And when you begin to realize all of the education you will get at Oral Roberts University for teacher training is on how to deliver the children from parental authority. Nothing else. That's all that happened in the garden. The dialectic process is Genesis 3:1-6. How to deliver the children from godly restraint. Look at our nation today. Unrighteousness, abomination. See, children of disobedience. That is now the norm. Well, this is Marx. Now, I read a lot of Marx, and he wrote 11 theses in Feuerbach. Everybody refers to the 11. The philosophers all interpret the world in many different ways. The objective, however, is to change it. Who's a philosopher? You know you're a philosopher? You know when you became a philosopher? When you're dissatisfied with what your parents told you to do, and you're thinking about how the world ought to be. See, the world ought to be to your pleasures of the moment, not to what dad's telling you you can or cannot do. So you're a philosopher. You didn't know that. You know, they use these highfalutin terms, and you say, oh man, I'm dumb. And no, we do it. We're philosophers. It wouldn't mean anything if we didn't do it. This stuff wouldn't work if it wasn't us. And so philosophers all interpret the world in many different ways. So I got 20 students who are philosophers. Why? Because they're all dissatisfied with their parents. Ah. The objective isn't to allow them to all do their philosophy and come up with their solution, because then each child would say, I'm right, you're wrong. See? The objective is change. Let's practice change. Let's do this process of dialoguing to a consensus, sharing our opinion in all situations, so that there is never a father's authority again in our culture. Because there is no father's authority in a dialogue. There's no father's authority in your opinion. Your opinion actually counters a father's authority. And so Marx said it, and this is number four, two paragraphs, but one sentence. Just, you know, once in a while they'll open a door and say, they'll make it easy for you. Because it's all in this double speak. You know, Hegel said, purposiveness without purpose, and lawfulness without law. You know, my head hurt trying to figure that one out. And then I went to the German, it was Kite. When I saw the Kite, the suffix. Kite means a quality, a feeling. A feeling of law without law. What's a feeling of law? What feeling of law do we all come into this world with? Law of the flesh. So we have the law of the flesh without the law of God. Isn't that what happened? We got rid of the law of God in the classroom. Now all we have is the law of the flesh. Lawfulness without law. But you would never pick that up if you read it. That's just some highfalutin stuff that you, man, I'm dumb. Hegel's brilliant. Maybe I better listen to him. Well, they're weak. I read Kant. Immanuel Kant, you know, Critique of Pure Reason in college, went over my head. Now, after I did the research, I spent 5 years in university reading over 600 social psychology books. So I went to the source, I read their stuff, I can speak in liberal universities. They can't refute a word I say. They tell me in the meetings, you know, you're absolutely right, but we hate you. They don't like it. I show them for the liars they are. So Marx said, once the earthly family is discovered to be the secret of the holy family. Well, let's look at the family structure. The Bible reveals the holy family and the earthly family. The husband ruling his home well. You can't be an elder in a church unless you rule your home well. That's very important. And then the desire of the wife's heart is to her husband, with the husband loving the wife like Jesus loves those who deny themselves, pick up their cross, and follow him. So I'm sort of adding stuff there, but I'm just trying to give you some structure. Now, the wife is to submit herself to her husband, but that doesn't mean she gets on the floor and he puts his heel on her. It's that she petitions him. She gives him all the information. My wife, I'll use this example. She was trained in management. You know the secret of successful management is? You only give the other person the information that guarantees your outcome. That's appropriate information. No, I said, give me all the information. And then she goes, well, you make stupid decisions. You'll ruin us. I said, force me to ruin us. Force me to be the husband. Force me to be accountable. Because, see, God told Adam, rule, right, didn't he? Yeah. He said, you rule. You're accountable. Sorry, I don't blame the women for what's happened to America. I blame the men. Men abdicated. Amen. They became feminine. Yeah. You know, and the idea is, okay, I'll let my wife make the decision. If it fails, it's not my fault. It's her fault. That's socialism. Do you know that's socialism? It's not your fault. Socialism, a socialist will never claim it's his fault. It's always my environment, well, I was my family's, you know, how I was raised, or somebody else did this. They're always blaming somebody else. Do you know that Adam and Eve were socialists? Look at the language. It's not my fault, it's this woman's fault. That's a socialist speaking. It's not my fault, it's this woman. You know, it's a smiling serpent's fault, you know. Somebody else's fault. So they're already into communism because they're a collective in their thought. Communism. Because they're both built on the flesh, leaning to their own understanding. So it had an effect, what they did. I didn't go the third one. Children obey their parents in the Lord. There's that clause. So once he says, once the earthly family and the holy family, they're both the same in structure. Marx understood this. The traditional family must be annihilated. That's all education is. The only purpose for that local school, Christian schools as well that are accredited, is to destroy parental authority. You have to do that if you want a one world system. And they do it theoretically and practically, and you'll come across theory and practice. Get on Google, type theory and practice, you won't live long enough. We're going to practice theory. We're going to practice opinion. We're not going to practice truth. Paul calls avoid oppositions of so-called science. So-called science is we live in theory. Real science, you know the facts. 2 plus 2 is 4, cannot be any other number. True science is a not. So-called science is I think, I feel. See, if you're an I feel and I think person, I hope you're miserable tomorrow. Or if maybe today. It's not that we don't have feelings and thoughts, it's that they are not to direct our steps. It's the truth that sets us free. Truth is liberating. Do you know that? It'll liberate you from your job, promotion, next term in office, respect with your relatives. Because we live in a world that doesn't want to hear the truth. But the truth is liberating because you can stand alone with truth. As I was doing the research, the Lord wake me up in the middle of the night. Now, I was in Oklahoma once, and I shared this as a Baptist group, and this one guy interrupts, and he goes, God speaks to you? Yes. Isn't that what Jesus said? My Father spoke to you. And so one night, and the Lord wake me up, and he put scripture in the middle of all of this. Well, one night, it was like this Peter, do you love me? Feed my sheep. The Lord asked me, are you willing to pay the price? And I thought, well, how strange. First of all, it's been 3 years already. I'm at the university reading all this stuff. I hate reading. And I hate reading this stuff of all things. And then I want to get some sleep. Sleep's the great escape. And the Lord wake me up. And I go, how rude. First of all, you have me doing something I hate to do. See, I didn't want to go to Africa. And where am I? I'm in the middle of Africa. And then you're waking me up. And he'd stick that verse in there, and then one night he goes, are you willing to pay the price? I have this little dialogue with the Lord. And I say, well, yes. The next night he wakes me up, are you willing to pay the price? And I go, I think I see a pattern here. Yes. And the next night he wakes me up, are you willing to pay the price? And it was grievous by then. Yes, and his response to me is, you will stand alone. Now, you understand, you're not going to be alone, but you're going to feel like you're all alone. Ever been there?
Yeah.
Because that's what truth does. There are moments in your life, you're all alone. And so, if you're going to follow the Lord, you're putting it on the cross, you're going to feel all alone. Because it's very personal. So they say, oh, it's business, it's not personal. Baloney. And that's what theory and practice. We're going to practice a theory. And if you live in a culture practicing theory, not interested in truth. Marxism all about negating the father's authority and society using force to do so. He killed the father. The French Revolution killed the fathers. Do you know that? 70% of the people who went to the guillotine were innocent of the crime. You know what their crime was? A father, Russian Revolution, same thing. If I came in with with my gun into your house, because it's now my house, see, everybody's house is my house because it's social. And you'd say, get out of here. Who are you? And I said, well, I'm your local Marxist. Well, this is my house. Get out of my house. Well, I know who to shoot because it's not your house. It's everybody's house. See, and the king would say, this is my kingdom. No, it's not your kingdom. Marx said, the king's horse is the people's horse. Isn't that what Adam and Eve did? God's tree is our tree. Same system. That's not your property. In socialist society, those aren't your children. That's not your property. That's not your business. It's the community that gives you identity, see. Well, what God say? The earth is Lord's and the fullness thereof. And then he gives us dominion over everything but man. We're not to have dominion over. We're to rule. But in a rulership, what you do is you're under somebody else's rule. There's always accountability. But Rousseau, we were talking earlier about Rousseau. Rousseau says the earth is the Lord's, the earth belongs to no one, and it's fruit to everyone. So if you have no right for private property or private home or private business, now your children are the village's children. Your business is the... So when they go buy your property, they don't see you. That is your property. It's their property, and you're a caretaker of it. You don't own property. You know that? You really don't own property. You know how you can tell? Don't pay your taxes for 3 years and find out how much property you don't own. You're paying somebody to work very hard on your land. On their land. do you realize the first 80 to 100 years of this nation that there was no property tax? Nebraska was the last state to not have property tax in 1933. Isn't that awesome? Wow. Because if you had no property tax, you could do whatever you wanted. You know, you couldn't offend your neighbor. I mean, you couldn't, you know, do harm to your neighbor. There's where the law came in, the border. But you could raise your children, run your business, and live according to whatever you believed was right.